My special guest today is Douglas Borthwick. Douglas is the Chief Business Officer of INX. Mr. Borthwick has over 25 years of experience in the finance industry. Before joining INX as Chief Business Officer, he founded and built the Chapeldean FX electronic and voice trading business for interdealer broker TPICAP. He has also held various roles at Morgan Stanley, as well as Merrill Lynch and Standard Charter. Welcome to the show, Douglas.
Hey, thanks for having me, Andrew.
Yeah, why don't you just start off by telling our audience a little bit about INX? What do you guys do? What is this blockchain world? How do you operate inside of it?
You know, think of INX as being, it's sort of a, well, we aim to be something like a Goldman Sachs, a NASDAQ, and a Coinbase. A Goldman Sachs in that we help companies raise capital. Not just any company, though, but companies that have communities. You know, they've got either a lot of subscribers, they've got people that believe in them, they've got fans. A company like a football team, and we're doing this for a professional soccer team called Burnley, that's a Premier League team in the UK. Or other companies that have, you know, significant amounts of followers, people that have followers on Twitter. So they come and they say, we want to raise money, $50 million, $100 million. We want to do so as a private company or as a public company with a prospectus. And we help them do that. We have a registered broker-dealer, a transfer agent, and an ATS. And after we've raised people money, we've raised them capital from their own communities, we then distribute the tokens to people's MetaMask wallets. And we allow them to trade in the secondary market on our ATS. That's an alternative trading system. So you have digital securities trading 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, with INX sort of as the overall umbrella to this. And on top of that, you can buy and sell these with crypto. You can buy it with Ethereum. You can buy it with USDC or with Bitcoin. And, you know, I think because of the nature of it being global, you know, you can trade these products and you can invest in these types of products 24/7, 365 from, you know, the United States, every state, but also from something like 40 countries. So it's a global way to raise capital from companies. But we actually go with the regulators in the passenger seat rather than in the rear view mirror, which I think you probably find from some of our competitors.
Sure. So folks who want to raise money but have fans that in their company, that is what makes it make sense for them to have these kind of digital securities, because their fans want them. They want to hold this. They want to own part of it. How is that different from a normal business?
It's not just fans, right? Let's take a hotel. People always talk about digitized, securitizing things. Hotel comes to me and says, I've got no fans. It says, okay, how many people have stayed in your hotel more than once? All right, good. Can you tell me how much was their average bill? Was it over $5,000? Okay. Sounds like you've got some accredited investors that have used your hotel more than once. So it sounds like they might be interested in investing in your company. Every company that's out there has a community. They're just not aware of it. I've talked to a spirits company. They make bourbon. They get 26,000 people on a mailing list. Well, guess what? That's people that might be interested in investing in your company. I've got rappers that have 5 to 25 million followers. They might be interested in investing in your new idea. Kanye West has got a lot of ideas. Sometimes he may say, you know what, I want to spin off my fashion company. And if he wanted to do that, how could he do it? Well, he could go out to his fans on Twitter and literally say, I'm thinking about spinning this off. I'm tokenizing it. If you're interested, go to this website and invest. And we set all that up for him. And that's, you know, and we do so in a legally compliant manner using the SEC and FINRA. And I think that that's, you know, how we're just different from others.
That makes a lot of sense. Can you talk a little bit more about how you're different in that legal compliance way? I know that it took a lot of work to set all this up, a lot of time with the SEC, a lot of back and forth. What were those steps that you took maybe that others haven't?
Well, you know, Andrew, in 2017, I don't know if you're old enough to remember, but back then there were things called ICOs, initial coin offerings. And someone would set up a website, they'd have what they call a white paper, which is a couple of pages saying, this is our vision. No one had any idea who the people were that were asking for the money. They had a board that they'd set up, and sometimes they just put a famous person's name on there. There was no due diligence. Absolutely anyone could invest in it using crypto. People did. They raised $25 billion amongst all these ICOs.
Wow.
And then the people that raised the money disappeared, and to a large part. Now, they raised money from U.S. individuals, which is illegal unless you register with the SEC or FINRA. And when they put their white paper together. It wasn't really a prospectus offering or what we call a PPM, you know, a purchase memorandum. Rather, it was something completely different and random. And what we did is we went to the SEC in 2018. We said, look, we like how they're raising money, you know, using the internet, using a web page, but it really should be regulated in some manner. You should know, do KYC, AML on every investor. So we want to do a prospectus, a full prospectus offering for a digital regulated security, registered security. And the SEC said, forget it. That's crazy. And we came back with MWE and Ernst & Young and spent 950 days, around $7 million doing that first prospectus. But what it does is it allowed us to go out there and raise capital through a website. From 7,250 people, we raised $85 million. Also, they were from 74 countries. Pretty significant. I mean, that's not a crowdfund. That's a huge capital raise.
It is.
And we didn't sell equity in our company. We sold 40% of our future profits, if we have any. Now, so that's pretty significant as well, because it's a limited number of tokens, but our profit, should we be a successful company, you'd expect would rise and rise and rise, but we can't print more tokens like you can with equity. You know how it is. When a stock does well, the company produces more stock. If you own 5% of Amazon on day one, I doubt if today you own 5% of Amazon. You probably own 0.00002% because they keep printing more shares as the price goes up.
Yeah.
And there's all of this dilution. With security tokens, digital securities, there is no dilution. You can trade it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And when I pay a dividend to someone, or when any of our issuers do, they pay it directly into the wallet you're holding the tokens in. So I have your wallet address. I have your KYC and AML attached to that wallet address. And when I want to pay you a distribution, I just take that USDC or Ethereum and I pay it directly into the address. I cut out so many middlemen. Very, very efficient. And you know what else is interesting? If I go to NASDAQ and I list there, I trade from 9:30 in the morning till 4 at night. If you list on our ATS as a digital security, you're trading 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. That's five times more than our traditional security trades. Now, if you're in Japan and you want to trade Nike, you're going to wake up in the middle of the night and trade it on the US stock market. With a digital security, if you're in Japan, you can trade it when you want to in your pajamas from home, in your time zone. And that's, I think, you know, one of the magic you talked about earlier about, you know, why are digital securities cool? Well, they're cool because you can do fractional ownership from anywhere in the world in your time zone, and you can participate in these primary offerings, and you can trade them in the secondary market. And I think that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and I'm sure you believe this, your company believes this, and I think I do too. This is the future of securities trading, that an increasing number of securities will be traded this way. And do you think this will become the dominant way it's done because of all those advantages?
Well, I'll give you a real world example. I saw on CNBC the other day that last year, $400 billion was raised through IPOs. This year to date, it's something like $3.5 billion. Now, I've got a pipeline of 28 companies right now that have come to me that are very aggressively looking to raise capital. It's around $3.5 billion. Now, I'm only 6 months in business. I haven't yet started educating the world about what a digital security is. If I get 24 companies come to me already and $3.5 billion in total, you got to figure that when we start marketing this and talking to people about it, there's going to be a lot more companies coming to me. But it's not just about the secondary trading. The future obviously is going to be trading on the blockchain. It's about the capital raising. Traditionally, when a founder has an idea, they go to private equity VCs. Private equity and VC takes a percentage of the company. They take equity.
Big one. Yep.
And they hold it, and they take a board seat. And if you don't do all the things you said you would do in a certain time period, they take your whole company and your IP. Now, if you've got a vision and you're a founder, you don't have to go to VCs and private equity. We didn't as INX. Instead, we went out to the general public and we said, here's our vision. Here's our idea. If you believe in this vision with us as well, then come on in and invest in us. We're not going to give you equity, but we'll give you a big slug, 40% of our profits in the future. You won't have voting rights, but you certainly won't have dilution. And I think that there's a lot of people out there that are willing to take that. I had a guy come to me. He had an injection for cancer. And he said, I need to raise $50 million to get through the FDA. If he goes to private equity VC, maybe he doesn't own the IP anymore after a year because the FDA says no and VC says you're out. but I own the IP. So his view is, let's go to the people that have cancer, have people that suffer from this cancer, and we'll go directly to them and see if they want to invest in it. They probably will. They see it as a binary thing. You know what? Either it doesn't go through, but we tried. But if it does go through, I get 40% of the cure for cancer. Absolutely, I'll buy that security. There's lots of different ways that you can appeal to people. But I'd say that, like with a soccer team, generally, if you support a soccer team, if you want to actually participate in how well they do, you got to be really rich. You got to be oligarch rich. Well, in the old days, not today. Now, but if you want your fans to participate, the only other token out there is like a Socios token. And all that lets you do today, and it's like an unregulated token that lets you vote on what music will they play when your band, when your team comes out. That's garbage. But if I go to a football game and I want some ownership, you know what? If they do well and there's big game day revenue, I want a slug of it. I want a piece. If they do transfer, they transfer a great player out, I want a piece of that too. And we're designing securities to allow soccer teams to be able to do that, go out to their fan base and people outside all around the world through a public securities offering and say, hey, why don't you invest in us? Do you love your team? Love them even more. And these are the types of things, I think, that people are realizing that is they don't have to go anymore to private equity, VC, or banks. They can go to the communities that already believe in them, believe in their ideas, believe in what they're doing, and share that vision. You know, when you're selling something to someone or you're asking to raise capital, who are the first people you always talk to? It's friends and family. Why is it friends and family? Because they believe in you and they want you to be where you are tomorrow. And your community's like that as well if you're a company. You're not going to be anywhere unless your community's with you, the people that use your services, the hotel description we gave earlier. Let's say you're gaming. You're an app for gaming. 200,000 people download your app. Well, they enjoy playing the game. They downloaded the app. They're still playing it. Why don't you go out to them and say, look, if you want us to be here tomorrow, do you want to contribute some money? And because we're looking to raise money. Odds are you've already done the sale. They already believe in you. They've already decided that they want to support you. They've downloaded the app. And that's really, I think, there's going to be a mindset change for a lot of companies where they realize they can go out to all of the people that use them or that are familiar with them or believe in them, and they can raise capital directly from them. It's not just about the secondary market, which I think, Andrew, initially you were excited about. It's about the primary market too, this capital raising market. It's all about to change. And we can taste the speed. Everyone else is firing people. I mean, I don't know if you've seen in the crypto markets, Coinbase is getting rid of people, cracking. I'm hiring. I'm hiring aggressively in the United States. I'm hiring people in Europe and I'm hiring people in Israel. And I'm doing it because, yeah, maybe crypto's having a problem, but to me, that's my side business. That's a way that people can buy things. My business is in the securities business, and we're raising capital for a lot of companies, and there's a lot of people excited about it.
How come this hasn't happened in the past? Was it mostly that there wasn't trust in the system and nobody spent the time to build to do it right? Is that why you're able to do this when nobody's done it before?
You know, we were the idiots that decided to write checkbooks. I think that a lot of people, they did exist. Security tokens existed before we came along. They were private. You know, Reg D, Reg S, limited to 2,000 investors and in sort of sleepy projects like real estate. Real estate doesn't trade up and down. It doesn't get people excited. You buy it, you hold it, and you wait for it to appreciate. We said, you know what? There's better uses of this, but digital securities will only become a big thing if they're publicly traded, if they're owned by tens of thousands of people, because that's where you get liquidity. You're not going to get liquidity in a private instrument where only 2,000 people own it and maybe only 20 people sign up for the platform every day to say, where's the price? If you've got a million people that own something, that's going to have a lot of liquidity. Why does a stock like Nike trade so much? Because so many people own it. And so we had to find a security in the digital space that would be owned by a lot of people. And the INX token, we said, you know what? Let's just do it ourselves. We're going to eat our own lunch. There's no use me going out there and selling an idea to someone if I don't understand it inside and out. So we invented it. We invented the digital security. We invented the ERC 1404 with TokenSoft, working with the SEC. And we also created a security such that one of the biggest things that the SEC said is, look, if you've got Bitcoin and it's in a wallet, you lose your wallet, you lose your Bitcoin. You can't lose your 401k in a boating accident or your IRA. And so this 1404 contract is what our token is on, this ERC 1404. If you lose your wallet, that's fine. We can revoke from that lost wallet these tokens and reissue them to a new wallet. If someone hacks your wallet, the token actually looks at the blockchain and says, hold on, I'm being asked to move to a new wallet. Is this wallet whitelisted? Because if it's not whitelisted, I refuse to move. Now that's incredible, right? Because everyone always worries about custody, especially for crypto. For digital securities, I think it'll be even more so because people own a lot of securities and you want it to be, quote, secure. And I'm sort of wallet agnostic because what we've done is we've created a smart contract that essentially is a really safe chicken. It's really hard to steal this chicken. So I don't care about the chicken coop that it's being stored in, because I think we've created a smart contract that is so smart that you can't hack the smart contract. So, you know, there's tremendous advances that are happening here. I think the reason that people didn't do it before is they didn't want to write a check to $3.5 to $7.5 to $7 million to a bunch of law firms. You know, it's expensive. And we had to come up with every single risk factor for a blockchain security. They'd never been defined before. And it took 3 years. Not everyone wants to walk into a combine harvester for 3 years and just get threshed and beaten and stabbed and punched and get charged for it.
Sure.
And I think, you know, as a company, we decided that this is something we wanted to do, because the only way you get Nike to move onto the blockchain is to show a pathway for it. You needed to have a private security that trades on the a public security that trades on the blockchain. There wasn't one, so we created one. And we raised a lot of money doing it in the process, so we could then set up the whole process for you, so we could essentially do capital markets in a box. I can print the tokens, I can distribute the tokens, I can raise you the capital, then I can list it. And it doesn't matter where you're coming from to me, and also due diligence on your product. I don't know how many things trade on crypto exchanges that have gone through maybe cursory due diligence. A lot of these utility tokens that they call themselves, the only due diligence they had is that they wrote a check for $500,000 to a crypto exchange that says, please list me. That's not how you protect the investor in the United States, the retail investor. You know, as a company, we do due diligence on anyone that we raise capital for. You have to as a broker dealer, and then you list it. So on the INX platform, I'd say in the next 2 months, you're going to have cryptocurrency listed next to securities, all of it digital, all trading 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one's done something like this before, and it's all pretty exciting. I mean, you're right, Andrew. This is the future, but the future's now.
Yeah, and it only took you getting thrashed by lawyers for $7 million to get you there. Right. Can you talk a little bit about the trading experience? Like, I'm used to trading something where I can see different cryptocurrencies, but on your platform, I'm also going to see different securities that represent ownership of the future revenues for companies.
Yeah. You ever bought an NFT?
Yeah, I was gifted one.
Where do you store it? In a MetaMask wallet?
Yeah, it's in a wallet.
Right. So on our platform, if you want to trade, your MetaMask wallet actually syncs in with our securities platform. Now, this is back up the truck here. An SEC and FINRA regulated securities platform that syncs in with MetaMask wallets. Now, if that hasn't blown your mind, because now this doesn't sound right. I thought the SEC doesn't do anything in securities. Well, actually, they do, and they do it with us. And so you take this, let's say I'm a Japanese guy and I'm in Japan and I want to buy a security on my platform. I can use Apple Pay in my MetaMask wallet to convert yen into USDC. The USDC I can send over to INX Securities. INX Securities will sell that on INX Digital for dollars, and those dollars will now be a balance that show up on the INX Securities area that now you can buy a security. And when you buy the security, actually, it's peer-to-peer. In that we match it for you, but this is a DeFi thing here, but every single person's MetaMask wallet that comes into my platform has been gone through KYC AML. You both match in my matching engine, and your securities will pass to him and his dollars will pass to you. And all of it, there's no custody by me at any time of your digital assets. So people are looking at Celsius right now and saying, oh my goodness, you know, I've got assets over there. When you trade on my platform, you're always in charge of your assets. You're custodying your assets yourself. I can't freeze them. I can't do anything like that. I can freeze your token if it's an INX token and you're a bad person. But otherwise, you know, it's your assets, your coins, your keys. You're in charge. And we've found a way to make DeFi CeFi, but also have the SEC and FINRA involved.
Yeah, and that leads to this experience for the users that are trading on your platform being more interesting and exciting, and they're able to invest in a different types of securities than other platforms in total?
Well, I won't fool you, Andrew. The first time someone uses this, it's not intuitive. It's like when our grandparents got a VCR for the first time and they needed the kids to come in and show them how to use it. But once you've shown them once, they figure out how to do it. MetaMask isn't for everyone. It's only for, I think, what is it, 50 million people now worldwide that are using it. It was only 1 million 3 years ago. Wow. So it's something that it's not a technology that people are used to. Normally, you're used to calling up your broker and the broker buys it for you. And then once they buy it, the broker keeps it for you in your name. Now, that's great if you like paying the broker lots of money. And if you like all of these different people in like a whole line to take crumbs off of your loaf of bread that you just bought. By the time you get the loaf of bread, you got a couple of slices that are missing. And the digital side here, we're doing it all direct. You're the guy that's doing the trade against someone else. And it's all being done, though, under this regulated umbrella. And we'll offer you different things. I've got different types of funds right now that are offering where you can buy into the fund through this platform. I'm going to have soccer teams. I'm going to have gold companies. I'm going to have Bitcoin miners. All these things you can invest in. Bitcoin mining. Well, let's talk about that. A Bitcoin miner, or you can buy, let's say you buy Bitcoin. If you're in Japan, you pay 55% tax on Bitcoin. But if you buy a Bitcoin miner security, you only pay 35% tax. If you buy and hold Bitcoin, you're not really getting much of a yield. Well, maybe you can over one of these yield plays, but maybe you'll get locked up forever and you never get your money back. But if you buy a Bitcoin miner, that miner is generating something like 3 to 5% a month if they pay out half the Bitcoin they mine. That's a lot of money. What's that? 30% a year yield. Plus, as Bitcoin rises in price, should it rise in price, if that's your belief, you're going to get the appreciation of that token as well. You know, so, and you're only going to pay 35% tax if you're in Japan compared to 55% tax. And if you're in China, you can't buy Bitcoin, but you can buy a US registered security. So there's lots of different products that we're bringing in that are really cool that people are going to want to invest in for tax reasons, or because they can't invest in the underlying, or because they see this as being a great place to do it. When someone buys this Bitcoin miner from me, and it's an ERC-1404 token, and they hold it in an Ethereum wallet, the Bitcoin miner is going to pay them wrapped Bitcoin directly into their wallet on a monthly basis. I mean, this kind of stuff's crazy, right? This is the kind of stuff that you think, wow, you can really do that? For sure you can, and we're doing it.
Wow. Yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting for sure. Who are the people who aren't excited about this? Like, I've tried to get stock exchanges, traditional exchanges, to talk to me about this concept. I think they're a little threatened by it. Do you?
No, for sure.
Yeah, like, it makes sense to me that I would like to, instead of IPOing my company the traditional way, I could do it this way. I can see a lot of advantages. And as a retail trader, I can see a lot of advantages as well. But like, for that Nike stock that's going to move in and trade on your platform someday, that's a big disadvantage for the traditional stock exchange. Can you talk a little bit about how they're thinking about this process?
Well, I'll tell you the disadvantages that I have relative to, let's say, a big stock exchange. Big stock exchange is linked to every single broker dealer in the world. I'm not. I'm linked to individual people. At some point, I'll link into broker dealers, but right now, you need something called a qualified custodian. This is a little wonky here. In order for real money funds to be able to be invested. So right now, what I'm doing is sort of open to retail, rich people, high net worth, family offices, leverage hedge funds. So they can all come and they can join in. Now, if you're something like Nike and you've got tens of billion dollar market cap, I don't have the audience for you today. I haven't onboarded that many people. I will. And over time, as I onboard lots of smaller companies of that 100 to $400 million market cap, I'll be building my community, and soon I'll be able to, I'd say right now I'm at that 100 to $400 million that I can comfortably give you an audience for. Give me another year, then we can do maybe up to $1.5 billion. Give me another year after that, maybe up to $4 billion. But it's sort of like, it takes time to build an audience on an individual basis when you're not doing it through distribution through broker dealers, which is the traditional network. But our view is that soon that broker dealer traditional network is going to collapse. You won't have to go through your broker in order to buy something on the New York Stock Exchange. Just go directly to the New York Stock Exchange. Why isn't it done like that? Or you think about the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ, and it's like two restaurants, but there's only one kitchen. It's called the DTCC. And that's a guy that's doing journal entries. Oh, this stock has moved from Douglas and it's moving over to Andrew. And it's a journal entry. Well, that guy's going to be out of business because guess what? Ethereum, on or you just go, the blockchain in itself, that is the journal entry. So you can say goodbye to DTCC. You can goodbye to your stockbroker. You can say goodbye to a lot of hedge funds, because with a digital security, I can see all of the buying and selling in real time. If it's on the Ethereum blockchain on etherscan.io, every buyer, every seller, you can see their wallets and you can look inside the wallet and see when was the last time they bought, when was the last time they sold. You can't creep up on someone and do a 5% buy and then do a self discussion. You think of what if hedge funds do, but it's all about edge, right? Well, the edge is gone when all of it's public information about who's buying, who's selling. You literally can look at it in a live time on Etherscan. So that business model's gone. So there's a lot of people that are against it. You know, when the car came out, when Henry Ford came out with his car, horse guys were so pissed off. They turned around and said, listen, I want to have two guys standing in front of the car, two guys standing behind the car, because it's very, very dangerous. And they said this, and this is their lobbying efforts, until they'd figured out that all the places they were selling feed, they could sell tires from. And then they said, you know what, we'll back off. And I think that that's where we're going in this market. But you talk about how fast is digital going to be there for capital markets. Think of emerging markets. Anywhere you go in the world, did the landline for telephones ever take off? No. They did an immediate jump from no telephones to mobile phones owned by pretty much everyone. I don't care where you go in Africa. And, you know, you see somebody, they're going to have a cell phone. And I think that we're going to have that jump as well for a lot of emerging markets economies, where they just do this jump from having no stock market to digital stock market.
Sure.
From no equity market to capital markets to suddenly a capital markets. Now, you know, I met with the El Salvador economy minister a couple of weeks ago in Israel, of all places. And we talked about exactly this. You know, El Salvador is a country that said, you know, we're doing Bitcoin. All right, so now you've decided you're going digital. What else do you want to do that's digital? Central bank digital currency? I can help you with that. You want to do a fixed income market? You got these volcano bonds? I can help you with that. You want to do an equity market? I can help you. You want to do capital raising? I can help you. All of these things in digital, why wouldn't they make the jump? It's so much more efficient. It's easy to do. I've got capital markets in a box. And I think you're going to see this now across the world, where you see emerging economies pick this up a lot faster because they don't have the lobbyists pushing against it as you'd find in the United States.
Sure. Do you think it's for the people that live in those countries that it's better, like for the average citizen, that instead of setting up another traditional stock market exchange where there's a lot of friction, a lot of cost, a lot of barriers to individuals participating in the market, do you think a country that jumps to something like this, it ends up being better for the citizens?
Well, let's talk about a number of things. When a company goes full blockchain, what does it mean? Well, it's national identity, first of all. So everyone has their national identity on the blockchain. If I have to distribute, let's say, COVID money, let's say you did this in Africa or in Colombia or Chile, are you really going to be able to go out into the jungles or God goodness knows where and hand someone cash? You know that there's lots of rife, that's just asking for people to steal money. And when it's on the blockchain, you can actually put it directly into a wallet that's on their phone. Now, also people in emerging markets, they've got no idea what the stock market is today. They don't get the newspaper delivered to them every day. They don't watch CNBC, but they do have a cell phone. And if on that cell phone, they can see all sorts of different investing alternatives, they'll probably think, you know what, maybe I should save something in there. And so they're getting money from their government, however it is, from their national ID that's on the blockchain in their phone. They've got a wallet that's been given to them. They can use that wallet to then purchase and sell different securities or different types of assets that are being shown to them, all from the comfort of their palm of the hand. And you can't do that with traditional markets. And so you have to decentralize essentially a lot of this stuff. How do you distribute something quickly to people when they're all over the place? Well, you do it to something that they're already carrying, and that's their phone. And you're going to find that custody becomes phone-based, like a MetaMask wallet, that trading becomes phone-based. Anyone under 30 years old in the United States, you ask them, how do you trade? They say, on my phone. How do you, where do you custody it? On my phone, I guess. Where are your NFTs? On my phone. Everything's on your phone. And emerging markets are going to make that jump. They already have. If I go to Africa right now and I want to buy something, there's some countries where I'm actually buying and selling, not currency, but phone time, and I'm transferring it from my phone to someone else's phone. And so digital is already happening there, just in different types of product. And all we're going to do is add some rules and regulations to it and offer them something completely different.
Yeah, you think about the problem in the United States of unbanked or underserved communities, folks who can't get access to some of these traditional tools, and they're cut off from the rising tide of the global market. I imagine those problems in other parts of the world are way worse, where there isn't a banking system, period. And yeah. I can see why you would jump right from a horse to a spaceship here. If you had the choice, you would do it as efficiently as possible, because you can get complete participation in that country.
Well, also, if the spaceship's free, you know, when a country, the first country that comes to me, it's sort of like, okay, here you go. I'll give you it. Why? Because it's a case study for a whole country.
Sure.
So it's sort of like that. That's a pretty good deal for a country that suddenly wants to jump into the future. But, you know, central bank digital currencies are interesting. They're very interesting because you have to think about how are they used. Like in a Western country like the United States, it would be used differently than it would be in China. Because in the U.S., we have something called the right to privacy. You do not want, I'm guessing, maybe there's some purchases that you've made in your life today, tomorrow, or in the past that maybe you don't want the government knowing exactly where you spent that money. And with a central bank digital currency that's used by the people, well, the government would know absolutely every purchase you made. You probably don't want that to happen. You probably enjoy cash. So I think you'll find central bank digital currencies used between the Fed and commercial banks in the United States. And then when it comes down to commercial banks, down to people, and people into buying things, people will be using USDC in these private stable coins.
I see.
But in China, a central bank digital currency will be used by all the population constantly. Think of the data that China is going to get when they know every single purchase you make, when you make it, how you make it. And then think about how that could then move into being a national ID system where you could actually get credit based upon what you're buying. If you start buying the bad stuff, your credit kind of goes down. I mean, that's a sort of ownership of people and spending that's going to happen at some point in some countries. And I think that the U.S. would probably move away from that and probably wouldn't want it, at least initially.
Right. If I'm buying the book 1984, I don't want a knock on my door a few days later by someone saying, we saw this in the ledger and it looks like you're reading something you shouldn't be.
1984, I think, is fine. I think Catcher in the Rye, that's the one you don't want to be caught with. It seems every bad guy has that one.
Yeah. In the United States, that's the bigger problem, I think. Okay, this is fascinating. I didn't expect you to tell me that this is where your platform is going. But can you talk a little bit about what your company, if you're following along at home or listening in on the podcast, it's inx.co if you want to check it out. But can you tell me what you're building now? What's next? Like, what are your developers building that is going to help you get from where you are now to the listing the Nikes of the world?
Well, listing the Nikes of the world would be great tomorrow. But first, we've got to list that, you know, everything is in steps. First, we've got to show to the world that we can raise capital quickly and that it's plug and play. Literally, a company comes in, I want to raise money. Okay, let's have your PPM, paste it in there. Let's raise it. Let's go out directly to your community. Once we've shown that we can do that, and I think in the next couple of weeks we'll be showing that, then we kind of move into mass production where we have a factory of companies that are being referred to us by broker-dealers all around the United States. And they come in, they go through the process, they print their PPM, and we raise capital for them. That's going to be a very, very fast process, I think. And I think, you know, in the end, we'll be having like a one company a week type thing that's raising capital with us and going out there. But you're already seeing that for utility tokens today, right? If you go to Tokensoft has got a new utility token they're raising capital for every single week. Boom, 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 boom. 40,000 people coming in the door and buying it. You know, once you can do a quick process towards it, there's no reason why you can't have, you know, speed of capital raise, because, you know, it's digital marketing and capital raises from people that already know you. It doesn't require flying all around the world doing these kind of roadshows. So I think that that's going to be interesting. But also, I mean, the concept of the capital markets in a box for digital, I think, is very, very real. You know, what we've created with the SEC and under SEC regulation is a way that you can do all parts of that, what we call the nose to tail of the capital markets cycle, whether it's raising capital, KYC, AML, minting tokens, delivery of tokens, the ability to revoke tokens, the ability to pay people into the wallets they're holding these tokens. That sounds a lot like a central bank digital currency as well to me, in that the INX token and how we presented it is exactly what sovereign countries are looking for all around the world. And so I can go to a country right now, I can say, I can do your national ID, I can do your central bank digital currency, I can raise capital for countries there, I can set up a stock market for you, I can sell your bonds to US folks if you want, and we can set up a bond market for you, all digital.
We've already done it in the United States. We already understand all the regulations and procedures. We can help you write that in your sovereign law. There's a lot of things that we can do. And I'd say that, yeah, we've got some pretty big ambitions, but you know, we also sometimes, you know, walk into where other people say that's a little crazy and we walk right into the fray.
Yeah. What did the SEC say at the beginning of all this? Were they trying to not deal with this problem or not even think about it?
You know, I think that the initial comment was you can certainly try, but we can't guarantee you success.
Wow. What a risk to start a multi-million dollar process that you don't know. You know, it's like there could be a cliff at the end and you just threw all your money off of it. But
look, if you've got a vision and you know that it's possible, then it makes sense that you drive towards it. You know, someone's got to make that first path. And, you know, I don't think anyone looked at Lewis and Clark when they were crossing America and said, you guys are idiots. Why don't you wait until someone else has done it? No, they just set off with a map and decided what they were going to do. And they created the map. And that's really kind of what we are. We were like the Lewis and Clarks of digital securities in that we set out to build a map for other companies to go out. If you ask any lawyer today, any blockchain lawyer, and you say, listen, I want to do a public offering, the first thing they'll do is they'll download the INX prospectus and then they'll start copying and pasting that to create the new one.
Yep,
and they're always going to do that. We built the map.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it is fascinating to hear about it. It's exciting to think about the possibilities and to know that somebody's out there doing capital markets in a box, helping companies raise capital in a different way, allowing folks to trade these digital securities that didn't exist a few years ago and building that map. It was just awesome to hear about it. I really appreciate you coming on the show, Douglas. It was an awesome, interesting time.
Great. Well, thank you very much for having me. Thank you.